welcome to the official Taskmaster podcast. First episode. Hooray. Fireworks. My name's Ed Gamble. You should know who I am if you're a Taskmaster fan. I was the undisputed champ of season 9. I won, baby! And you would have thought that would be my dream complete. I've won my favourite television show. But no, I couldn't let go. That's why I've asked to host this podcast. I am clinging on by my fingertips. Like I say, this is the official Taskmaster podcast. I'm going to be chatting to a special guest every week after the main show on Channel 4 to go through what happened, really, to sort of dissect and discuss it a little bit, chat about how people are doing, what they did wrong, what they did right, all of that sort of gubbins after the main show on Channel 4 at 9 p.m. It's on Thursdays, 9 p.m, Channel 4. Starts on the 15th of October, but you should know that already, because you should not be listening to this if you've not seen the first episode. This podcast is made to be listened after you've seen the episode. There will be spoilers. We will be drilling down into the detail, into the minutiae. This is for nerds who have seen the episode already. Thank you. And if you're overseas and you can't access the episodes, but you can access this, I would advise, and you won't hear podcast hosts do this very often, don't listen to it. Don't listen to it. You're going to spoil your favourite thing. And it won't make any sense, a lot of it. It's just going to be a bizarre Lynchian type thing where you're going, why are they saying that? Why are they talking about this? What do they mean about those eggs? See, even then, I've said eggs. That's a bit of a spoiler for this episode. Turn it off. Don't listen to it. Go and listen to another podcast. Off Menu with Ed Gamble and James Acaster, something like that. Just go. I'm going to give you a second. Go. Okay, good. They're gone. Right, we can crack on. What a first episode that was. Very much looking forward to speaking to our special guest. And I should tell you as well, if you are in a family or you have young kids and you love Taskmaster, but you're worried there's too many swears and bottoms in it, don't worry. A family-friendly version is going to be on E4 every Sunday after the Channel 4 transmission. So the Sunday after, the Thursday it goes out normally, 6 o'clock E4 is the family-friendly version, apart from this first episode, which is on at 5:45 on E4 on Sunday. That's the family-friendly version of episode 1. Right, a lot of admin to get through, granted. But we're going to crack on now. If you want to get your questions into our special guests, not this one coming up, because of course we've already done this, hence you listening to it, email taskmasterpodcast@gmail.com. A lot of our guests are former Taskmaster contestants. You can ask them anything about their time on Taskmaster, anything about the show in general. There is no question too specific. But let's crack on. Very excited. Our first guest, which you'll probably know, it's probably in the subject of the podcast or something, is Alex Horn. Of course it is. The Taskmaster's assistant himself. Who better to kick off this podcast and give us all the secret behind the scenes goss than Alex Horn? Let's crack on. Welcome to the official Taskmaster podcast. I declare this podcast open. That's the mayor of podcasting popped in there. Thank you, Mayor. Welcome, Alex Horn / Little Alex Horn, to the first episode of the official Taskmaster podcast. Thank you very much for being our very first guest.
Woohoo! Hi, Ed. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you for the woohoo as well. What a start. We're gonna find out what this podcast is as we go through it, Alex.
Yeah.
We'll probably overanalyze it to the point that you're not enjoying it. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, sounds great. So we want it to be a fairly dull podcast. Is that the idea?
Yes, very well. If you feel like it's dull, it's not dull to the Taskmaster nerds. But as you know, what you might think is boring about Taskmaster, the minutiae, people love to hear about it.
Yes, I don't find any aspect of it boring, actually, but I'm just conscious that I am a boring person, or I have the potential.
Right, we've factored that in.
Okay.
That's why I'm hosting it. I'm sort of the fun one to sort of keep you going.
Yeah, it's another show that I'm not allowed to host, which I'm fine with.
It's a real shame. You've got to this level now, finally, with Taskmaster, and you're still not allowed even to host the offshoot podcast.
Can I host the podcast? No, we're going to get Ed to do that. Yes,
no, we'll
good
get
idea.
Ed to do that. Yeah. Fair enough. So we kick off first prize task of the series. The nicest thing to put in your mouth. Now, initially, I was slightly worried that you'd gone saucy. Now you'd gone to Channel 4.
You thought the whole episode was going to be blue.
I thought the whole series was going to be blue. I thought you turned it into sort of Naked Attraction style show. I thought the Channel 4 execs had started meddling with it and gone like, oh, we need it to be sexier. Was that a note you got at any point?
No, it wasn't. But it is sexy, isn't it? The idea of putting something in your mouth.
Oh, then especially nice things.
Wow.
Do you, when you come up with a prize task, do you think about what you would pick for the prize task, or do you just enjoy asking other people the question?
So the Andes, one is a producer, one is a director, Andy Cartwright and Andy Devonshire. We have a little chat about them. And if Andy Cartwright is worried about one, he will say, Alex, what would you put in?
Yeah.
But until he does that, I don't think about it at all. Because I sort of trust that five comics will come up with stuff and they won't come up with the similar thing to me. But if I can't think of anything at all, then maybe it's not right.
Now, when you say you trust the five comics will come up with something, that didn't necessarily happen on the opening episode, did it?
No.
Greg was very disappointed with the with the responses. I was absolutely blown away that's what they came up with. Daisy May Cooper, picked white wine. She went very route one.
Just white wine.
Just white wine.
Okay.
And we're off, Greg. We're off.
Feel the rush!
I thought, well, this isn't in with a chance of winning the prize task this week. And then it sort of steadily went downhill from there.
Yes. So a differently produced show, we would have told them, look, really make an effort with these prize tasks because it's the first thing that's going to happen on this brand new channel. But I always think it's funnier when people are bad. Yeah. And also, it's got to be real. So that's what Daisy did, bottle of wine. And it is nice to put in your mouth.
Yes. No, she's absolutely right. She's absolutely right, but I liked it as well. It's very funny to start off like that, and very funny that sort of across the board it was a bit like that. I really enjoy watching people panic at the prize task, because having done the show myself, I didn't realise until we started filming that the prize task is the most stressful bit of the studio records, because you think about these things for ages, or I certainly did, and then the first one, I can't even remember what the first one was that I had to do, but you present it, and if it sort of doesn't get much... It's then real. It's real stress. You just suddenly think of the nine you've got coming up across the series and really panic about it.
Yeah, people do change their items quite often as the course of the series unfolds. But also, this was different because there was no studio audience. So in terms of them not getting much reaction, it was just not getting much reaction from Greg.
Yeah.
And that happens every time.
With the no studio audience, I think I mentioned this to you another time. But it seemed like everyone had lost their minds in the first episode. It was wonderful. It was wonderful and joyous to watch. But it's like, well, people sort of had been locked down for months. So to be able to see other people and have a laugh, there were tears in everyone's eyes immediately.
Yeah, everyone's very giddy, definitely. And I think we were scared. The first 5 minutes, Greg and I were very worried about no laughter in the room from the audience. But the weirdness stopped almost immediately because Daisy and Johnny laughed so loudly. It felt like there were 400 people in there.
Also, a little glimpse of the personalities of the contestants straight away, I think, in that Richard Herring is the last to present his prize task and immediately says, well, I've decided to go with what was actually asked for. So we're beginning to see a glimpse of sort of competitive stuff from Herring. Is that fair? Is that something that shines through for the rest of the series? Because I'd like to sort of have a little spotlight on each of the contestants for this first episode.
Spotlight on Richard.
Thank you.
A couple of things shine through from that. First is that he's watched the show before, which can't be said for everyone all the time. But he's watched every episode more than once, I think. He's determined to win.
Yeah.
And I really like it when people talk about the other things that have been brought in instead of just presenting their own. I really want people to react to what everyone else has brought in. So I was very pleased by Richard's reaction. He also looked a bit, like you say, over-competitive and a bit annoying. I quite like that. Someone who's early doors winding people up, including Greg. So I think he thought he was going to be punished more than he was by Greg. He always felt like a beating was around the corner from Greg. And he's got a bit of Badil about him as well. He's old... He tries to do things in a straightforward way. There wasn't a lot of lateral thinking.
And really wants to win.
I think maybe more than anyone.
But anyone ever or anyone in the series?
No, I'd say maybe more than anyone ever. In terms of just wanting to win.
So we move on to the first task proper of the series, one of your tricksy tasks. It starts off as a coconut shy and turns into, of course, having to carry pints of squash to a caravan while holding a teddy bear.
Yes, so we thought we'd be fairly brave with the first one and surprise, hopefully, viewers who hadn't seen it before by thinking this is fairly ordinary, but there's a twist. And I think it's nice to start with something a little bit more off-kilter. I mean, fans of the show will be expecting it, I think. When you see Not That Coconut off the stick, they'll think there's more to this. And Catherine Parkinson was very pleased with herself for thinking, I'm not going to throw the balls, I'm just going to knock it off. As
yes,
Daisy.
Of course.
Whereas I think, Herring knew there'd be more. Good old Herring.
I think what you were doing there as well is, because obviously the quicker you knock it off, the bigger the bear, right?
Obviously.
You're punishing people for being clever in that.
Well, we're rewarding them with a lovely big bear, Ed.
Ah, okay. You're sticking with this, are you?
Well, that was the logic to it. Is that if you knock the coconut off straight away, you should get a big bear.
Yes. Okay. Yes. But also, I think what you are doing is you don't like it when people try and find tricksy ways around it, like not using a ball or just running and knocking it off with their hands, because you think that ruins the fun.
Yes.
Which I sort of agree with, but sort of don't agree with.
Yes.
So you're trying to punish people for thinking they're clever by knocking off with their hands.
Yes. I think that's all correct. And also punishing people who throw a ball and hit it first time, because no one likes that guy.
No.
Who's really good at throwing a ball at a coconut. What an idiot.
I think I would have been the guy running and knocking it off with my hand.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd be the smug guy. Mawans was my favourite technique because he threw six balls at once and knocked it off immediately. But no one has ever thrown a ball like that before.
No.
Whereas Johnny was just sad dad.
Sad dad for Johnny. Why don't we focus on Johnny briefly?
Spotlight on Johnny.
Spotlight on Johnny. Thank you. Sad dad is definitely a good description of him, especially for this first episode, I'd say.
He's a sad dad to imaginary children as well in this first episode.
Yes.
And quite a few times it's a motif throughout the series, actually. Joy as well. Plenty of joy. He's got levels of everything, but he's quite in touch with his sadness.
And that's always been the case for Johnny Vegas. That's why I was very much looking forward to seeing him on Taskmaster. He's sort of built for it, isn't he? I think a lot of people have requested him in the past just because he throws himself into things with abandon. So they had to hold a bear getting the drinks from the phone booth to the caravan. Did you pick this as the first one because it was a surprising one? How in general, across all of the series of Taskmaster, do you decide on which task is going to be shown first?
So one thing we never do is plan it according to the points. We never try to work out who's going to win it because that would be tedious. So we pick the tasks. Yeah, we're just trying to make a balance. And the opening task of a series is quite delicate because you want everyone to stand out. You don't want anyone to have an invisible sort of task. You want everyone to show their personalities a bit, I suppose.
There is a fairly spectacular moment in the tasks, especially in that task with Daisy. It's quite an amazing way to kick her Taskmaster journey off basically spilling the majority of the drinks from what I could see. It turned into a scene from Some Mothers Do Have Them.
Well, what I did in the wording, so I come up with the wording for the tasks, and I think I regret this now. I put in, you may not spill a single drop.
Yeah.
And she spilled a single drop and then many, many more pints. So she was punished the same amount as somebody who spilt just one drop.
So, well, Greg's obviously let people get to him. So he's often called out for not being harsh enough in his scoring. And he's obviously let that get into his head. It keeps him awake at night. So he's really kicked off this series by punishing everyone for everything.
And I think he's right too. And again, I think it's funny that no one did the first task of the series.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not an impossible task. So there's plenty of ways. I don't know how you would have done it, but you could seal the pints.
You could seal the pints. I mean, Mawan's idea initially was good of pouring them all into a bucket.
Well, his first idea was to try to drag the whole phone box.
He tried to move the phone box.
Mawan's idea to fill a bucket and then bring the bucket there. I think that would have counted. That would have been fine.
Yeah, I think it's so easy to sit there, watch it, come up with what you would do, because in the moment, God knows what I would have done. But filling, I don't know why he chose to fill the bucket through a series of pipes interconnected. He could have gone in with the bucket and just poured them in.
No, and he wasn't trying to be funny or clever. He was trying to be good. Also, watching it, you realise if you'd just done it very, very slowly, you would have won. And that's often the case in Taskmaster, that the slowest person does win because everyone else infringes the laws.
Should we do a spotlight on Moan then?
Spotlight on Moan.
There we go. An amazing first episode for Moan, I thought. It's always good to see slightly newer people introduced via the medium of the show. And again, everyone seems perfect for it because you pick the right people. How did you come to get Moan for it? Have you seen his stand-up in the past? Have you worked with him before?
So everyone who goes on it, I have seen before. I mean, that's the beauty of being a comedian and a producer on it, because it's a very small industry, our industry, so you do tend to know everyone. And if I don't, then I've got spies like Tim Key, who he's still got his toe in the circuit much more than me. So with Moan, I saw him on the Harry Hill ITV late night show. Have you seen that? His which is another good show for introducing new people.
Yes.
And he was by far the funniest in the episode that I saw. And then I went down a little Moan Rizwan wormhole on YouTube. He's got some brilliant stuff at the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Yeah.
Songs and dances and jokes. He's an all-round package, Ed.
Yes.
And I really like the idea that he might be able to bring some of that to our show.
That's always good when you see people have got sort of musical skills or can dance and sing and things like that. You think, well, they're almost certainly going to be able to bring those skills to Taskmaster.
Yes.
And you knew I couldn't, and thanks for still getting me involved.
You sang. Your musical tastes were at the fore of quite a few of your attempts.
Yes, it's because I've only got two things, Alex. I'm diabetic and I like heavy metal. So anything that I do in comedy, I have
You've got your pretty tattoos.
I've got that's part of the heavy, that's under the heavy metal umbrella, isn't it?
No, you're right, that's it.
Task two. Make the largest object properly vanish.
Yeah, another fiddly wording there, properly. And there was an argument in the studio about whether anything can properly vanish.
Yes.
But you know what I mean? It's got to be, you've got to properly vanish. Now you see it, now you don't. That's what properly vanish.
And with no editing trickery being the key.
Yes.
The key wording.
Yeah, we're looking for sort of old school magic, you know, hiding an elephant. Or some more lateral thinking. And we got a combination of both of those things, I think.
I think so. I mean, you really didn't do any editing trickery to the point I think it screwed Catherine over a little bit, because while she was doing her presenting to the camera, you can hear a sofa just being dragged.
I'm not a magician, but I've worked out a way of making the largest thing I could find in this room disappear, vanish, poof. So when I've done it, I'm going to not click my fingers because I'm not very good at doing that, but click my hands. So... where's that large sofa gone? It's vanished.
There wasn't even any sound editing.
The sofa wasn't dragged, Ed. This is the...
But it was moved. So that's
no,
what
the
you
sofa
could...
wasn't moved at all. The
cabinet thing was moved, yes.
Yes. So Greg thought the sofa was moved. So in a way, she did trick him into making him think a different method was used.
That's not like magic, is it? Like if a magician did a card trick and you were like, I know exactly how you've done that. He's like, no, I did it this way.
Well, I don't know. I quite often watch Fool Us with Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
And they will say, well, I think I know. Was it the sofa that moved? And she would say no. And then they would go, you've won a spot in Vegas with us.
Ah, so she would win a spot in Vegas.
I think Parkinson is now on the Penn and Teller show in Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah, that was part of it. That's one of the secret prizes on Taskmaster that you never see. She's not on next week's episode because she's in Vegas.
No, she was not. It wasn't. Well, she was throughout the series convinced you couldn't leave the room unless it said leave the room. So she thought it would make the largest thing in this room vanish.
Right.
So she was hampered by the fact that had to be the sofa. She's a lovely, strange lady.
Yes, I didn't know what to expect. Spotlight on Catherine.
Spotlight on Catherine.
I didn't know what to expect from Catherine, but I really like her, and I really like her in the studio tasks and in the studio chat. She looks like she's constantly on the verge of either laughing or breaking down in tears.
Yeah, she was quite bewildered by herself a lot of the time. Confused why she made these decisions. Yeah. I really like her because she's very poised in real life or on screen because she's normally acting. Obviously, you never really see Catherine Parkinson being herself, but she was still poised whilst being rubbish consistently.
Yeah, I really, especially in the first task as well, the idea of doing tippy-toe running. No one else decided to change the meaning of walk to try and get on the grass, which is an interesting way of doing it. No one else did it.
Now, that's an example of looking at the wording and changing it that we would be fine with if she hadn't walked.
Yeah.
But walking on tiptoes is still walking.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to seeing her for the rest of the series as well. Is she going to become more unhinged? Can you let us know that? Is she going to unravel?
She unravels. There's one particular task, which is maybe my favourite, where she and Richard Herring have moments which stay with them for the rest of the series. You know when someone does something in a task which becomes their calling card throughout, and we used to never refer back to previous tasks in a different episode, but these two do something so off that we have to keep mentioning it.
So Catherine might unravel more during the series. Johnny had unraveled before the series started because he did a video of a chicken destroying a paper London.
So that was very, very Johnny, very peak Johnny. So he's very artistic, as we know. He's a proper artist. He trained. He's got a degree in fine art. He's a potter. And he's an amazing drawer. And all those things, none of the production team helped. All the little buildings that he made. And he really spent hours doing it. And I was expecting this is going to be amazing. I don't know what he's going to do. He's got something up his sleeve because he started it immediately. Normally people, when they get straight into a task, it means they've got a plan. You know, something's landed in their brains. Like when you did your mermaid task, which was maybe your finest moment. So with this one, Johnny immediately launched into making these origami buildings from London, including Starbucks and Big Ben.
Yeah.
And they look great. And there was cartoons. There's a bit of satire about the corporations in London.
Yeah.
But in terms of the thing disappearing, there was a massive chicken. And then he put a piece of paper in front of the chicken.
Chicken rages rampant across London. Tell me what can we do? The armed forces have alerted. Just when we think all hope is lost, it disappears.
I mean, we'll talk about the points afterwards, but I think he was, for me, he felt over-awarded for that. It was very funny, but it didn't seem to stick with the task. I mean, it sticks with the sad dad thing as well. It's like he was doing a little puppet show for his children.
Yeah.
And had a breakdown halfway through.
And I think Greg always likes a story as well. He always, one of his catchphrases is, let's drill down into the narrative here.
Yeah.
So
imagine that being a catchphrase.
Yeah.
He never would have thought that. You told him when he started comedy that one of his catchphrases was going to be, let's drill down into the narrative.
Oh, it's so funny. I can see the words forming in his brain and out they pop.
Yeah.
But he enjoyed drilling down into Johnny's narrative there, I think.
Yes, fair. So, like, Richard obviously did an amazing magic trick, and he obviously knew about that magic trick, and he did the thing with the mirror.
He did it well, didn't he?
He did it really well. I was genuinely impressed. But again, you can see how competitive he is. When Greg immediately guessed how it was done, he couldn't conceal his disappointment.
Yeah.
Because he was so proud and then so sad.
There's a slight wobble in the mirror. And again, a different show probably would have got rid of that. Because it wouldn't have been hard to lose that, but that would have been cheating. You know, the whole point was there's no editing at all. And there was a wobble. Yeah. There was a wobble, Ed.
There was a wobble in the mirror.
There was a wobble in the mirror. And also, I think most people probably thought there's a mirror involved. Even though you are briefly impressed, you straight away go, well, yeah, but it must be a mirror.
It must be a mirror, yeah. Mwan's was genuinely impressive.
Did you see it coming?
No.
No.
I absolutely fell for it.
So we don't show these to Greg. Occasionally, Greg and I will chat about what's coming up. You don't want him to not be able to say anything at all about anything. But more and more, we trust that his instincts will kick in. And his funniest comments are instinctive, I think. So, he didn't know where that cow had gone. He was bemused and a bit frustrated by how bemused he was, I think. Yeah, it's brilliant. That was a really good one.
Did Mwan come up with that pretty quickly? Or did it take him a while to sort of formulate that and put that together? I think even given 3 days, I wouldn't be able to do that.
It was a classic hour-long task, that. So the way, as you know, it works is that when you've got an hour, you do have an hour, but there's a chance if we need equipment, you might think about it for 20 minutes and say, right, I'm going to need this thing.
Yeah.
And we'll pause the clock and do a different task in the meantime while someone goes out and buys it. But that one, I'd say he spent 20 minutes thinking about it and 40 minutes making it happen. And he
wow.
It was always going to be replacing a small thing with a big thing. That's the first time that cow's appeared in the in the show. Lovely cow. I've got my
well, the cow also made a disappearance in Daisy's magic trick.
Yes.
Which wasn't so much a magic trick as because she didn't show the cow there and then saw it vanish. She just put it in a hedge and then started filming, right?
It's one of them where she fundamentally misunderstood the key word. I think she thought vanish. I suppose vanish, she didn't understand the time aspect of vanish. She just thought it meant remove it, I suppose.
Yes. It's perfect within the narrative of the episode as well that she did that. So she brought white wine just straight in there, no thought, smashed up all the drinks in the first task and then just wanged a cow in the hedge for the second task.
Yeah, but whilst dragging the cow into the bush, she was always thinking, well, this is great. I've made the biggest thing vanish. She didn't understand why that could possibly not be seen as a good thing.
Now, the points here, like I say, I think for me, you know, look, if I was judging it, I wouldn't put Johnny's high because it didn't feel like he'd made anything properly vanish, as entertaining as it was.
Sure. I mean, I think I can see why it got some points, because he sort of managed to blend the piece of paper into the background. That was the idea. There was some proper logic to it.
Yeah.
The execution wasn't perfect. How many points did he get?
He got 4 points.
No, that's far too many.
That's far too many. That's what I'm saying. He got 4 points. Moana obviously won.
Moana
wins. That was the correct decision.
Are we having Richard in second, me and you?
I would have Richard in second. I think it was a straightforward magic trick, but I think he took the task and he ran with it.
Yeah, and also you've got to bear in mind it's meant to be the biggest thing, and he made me disappear, whereas Johnny made a chicken disappear, which was a massive chicken on the scale of London, but it was just a chicken.
That's true. He played with scale, but then within the narrative of the show, you're quite little. Within the narrative of the show, are you smaller than a chicken?
Probably.
Yeah. So that's actually smaller. Yeah. So, but I would put Richard in second. Catherine came joint with Richard, but Daisy is in last place, and I feel like that's correct in this instance.
Yeah. And I also like that Greg is not necessarily reflective of what everyone else thinks. He should be a bit odd with his judgments. But it may well be one that he regrets slightly. Not for long, but he has fleeting regret. But I think there is some justification to Johnny's. He made the stuff, and that should be rewarded.
Let's move on to the third task, the final pre-taped task of this episode. Getting eggs into a pan below a balcony, but only using the contents of one box.
So this is a task that I watch it and think, I want to do this. And all the crew wanted to do this.
Yeah.
Because I think it's doable, but it's tough.
Yes.
As was proved.
It was very tough. I mean, obviously, in my arrogance, I think I could have...
What was your method?
I could have got some in. Well, the thing is, I couldn't see everything that was available in the boxes, right? Mm-hmm. So I possibly would have gone helium balloons.
Yeah, so I think that's a mistake, but it looks
then,
like the most
But then
fun
with
way.
A tether. With a tether yeah. on it. And
I think
my head it works.
So Daisy very nearly did it, but I think she very nearly did it with a lot of help from me.
Mm.
So I was controlling the leaf blower, she was controlling the balloons. It was still a tragic miss.
It was a tragic miss. How do you decide whether to help people or not? Because quite often I would ask you for help and you'd say
Oh,
no.
I see. Yeah, it tends to be if a woman asks for help, I will help her.
Okay.
So I guess that's sexist, but also polite. I don't know.
Yeah. I
want to help.
You're a polite sexist.
I think I would have helped you if you really needed the help.
Okay.
I don't think there was ever a thing where you couldn't lift something and I didn't help
No,
you.
It was normally, I think you tend to turn down help when it's someone's first instinct to try and get something done. So if you're trying to work a way around something and you go, well, how about you just do that bit? You're obviously going to say no because it's going to be boring, right?
Yeah, we want to see you struggle a bit. But in this case, Daisy had been struggling for 15 minutes and she simply wanted someone to hold
a leaf blower.
Yeah, so apparent. I wasn't doing much wafting. And maybe it was a two-person task.
This is my highlight of the episode is, and I think probably going to be a lot of people's highlights, is... Mwan trying to put helium in an egg.
Yes. Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, something's coming to me.
What if I've made a hole in the egg and then filled it with helium?
Okay. Okay, I've just wasted an egg.
Now,
when that
it
happened,
seems mad.
I was so excited when it happened. Because I'm seeing these things live. And when you see that, you think, well, that's just amazing. And also, he's really clever. But in those 20 minutes, his brain vanished. He didn't understand helium at all.
Yeah. Because we should stress this. He didn't do that to be funny, did he? He genuinely was trying to do that.
Yeah, and I can see... Can I see the logic? I don't think I would ever think that might possibly work, that if you fill an egg with helium, an egg that was already full of egg.
Yeah.
He didn't empty the egg. He didn't blow the yolk and albumen out.
He just tried to put extra helium in the egg.
Yeah, in the
But
little...
also, so if you follow that logic, what he thought was going to happen is he put helium in the egg, then the egg can float.
Yes.
But then surely all the eggs, how is he going to get the eggs into the pan? They're just going to float upwards and bob around at the ceiling.
Yeah, I mean, he literally didn't understand it. Whereas Johnny fully understood how helium worked and beavered away and very nearly did it. But no, my one was awful. So you weren't allowed to throw the eggs either, because that's probably your instinct, isn't it? Just lob an egg in.
Yeah. But then also the instinct is what's going to be the most entertaining thing. And I think quite often what happens is you get confronted by something that seems tricky or you can't think of a way to do it. And the crossroads are try and do something simple and boring, or by all means do something that makes you look insane but is going to be entertaining.
On this one, I don't think anyone's thinking this is the most entertaining, but some of them were thinking this is going to be the most entertaining for me. So Johnny was always going to do helium balloons, because helium balloons is fun. The idea of making a sort of up style contraption to get this egg home.
Yeah, exactly. It looks
But the
good.
Box that would have worked, I think, is the one that no one chose, which was just cardboard boxes with these little screws and nuts and bolts that you could make essentially a long chute.
Right.
They all would have connected. All the cardboard boxes had holes in, which was the perfect size for them. And you could just made a nice flat chute like the builders do and just scooted an egg into the pan. I think that would have worked.
An egg into the pan.
And also the magnet system, which we don't often demonstrate the correct way of doing it, but we did demonstrate that. I retrieved the frying pan by throwing the magnet at it.
Oh.
And dragged it back towards me.
Yeah.
That would have been the way to do it.
So bringing the pan to you.
Bring the pan to you. But no one even realised. Very few of them realised that it was a magnet.
Yeah.
And I guess once you choose a box, you can't change your mind. So if it wasn't a magnet, you know, if the pan hadn't been the right metal.
Yeah, if it had just been a disc and then you just throwing that in the pan, that wouldn't have worked.
But no, it was I think it was a really fun task, that. And again... I mean, I don't think we've ever had an episode where two of the tasks were unaccomplished.
I mean, if you include the prize task, they sort of were all three things slightly unaccomplished, really.
Yeah, and if you think that only two of them really made anything vanish.
Yeah. What a way to kick off the show on Channel 4. But Daisy got a bonus point for that, and I think that was deserved, because I really think she nearly got it, didn't she?
Yeah, the bonus point's interesting. I think some people will think it's undeserved because she didn't do it.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I think it's all right, isn't it, to be generous?
I think it's okay.
It's okay.
I mean, it shows the sort of two minds of Greg. He suddenly panicked that he's not harsh enough, and then by the end of the episode, he... he's given out bonus points for doing fine. So let's do a spotlight on Daisy, then.
Spotlight on Daisy.
That's nice. Daisy, amazing first... I mean, everyone had a very strong first episode, I think.
Worth talking about her outfit, maybe.
Yes, achievement woman.
So the first time I ever saw Daisy, I hadn't met her at this point, was, and this sounds boasty, but at the BAFTAs, we didn't win, she did win, and she turned up in a dress made out of a Swindon football shirt.
I remember this happening.
Long red dress, and she made such an entrance. You know, you're always jealous of other people who make a better impression than you.
Yeah.
But she's into her outfits, and this one, her achievement woman outfit for Taskmaster, was made by the same person who made the Swindon dress. And it had lots of details on it. It's got sort of achievement badges all over it, like swimming a meter and stuff like that. And they all gradually fell off over the course of the filming. But she looks terrific, I think. She looks
It's a really strong outfit. And just the amount of joy she brings to this first episode in the studio and during the tasks. Just that hoarse laugh where it feels like her eyes are about to pop out every time she laughs.
She made us all feel better about ourselves, like Greg and I particularly, because it just created that energy in the room. Yeah, she's 100% good, Daisy.
And does she maintain that sort of enthusiasm throughout the series, or does she get so into it that it brings her down a little bit at any point?
Pretty much. Occasionally I glanced over and she looked yeah, very, very glum. She's sort of 0 to 60 in a second. But no, that energy is there all the time. And it's real. She's not, yeah, there's no fake laughing there. And she and Johnny found each other very, very funny. They were a good little team.
That would conclude the first episode of Taskmaster Series 10. Very, very strong start. And obviously, yeah, you've got all the behind the scenes goss as well. But in the future in the series, we're going to be having previous contestants who are going to.
Oh, it's not me every week.
It's not you every week, no, Alex. But no. Feel free to pop on if you want to. I thought maybe you might like a little rest from Taskmaster, given it's pretty much your entire life now.
No, it's an honour to be your first guest, Ed, but I'm very happy for other people, more interesting people, to give their hot takes.
Oh, we've got no interesting people coming
on. Oh, fine, yes, good.
No, very boring. So we've got some questions. Now, we've got a Taskmaster Podcast email address, which is taskmasterpodcast@gmail.com. So if you want to ask anyone any questions coming up, general Taskmaster questions, we'll be announcing who our guest is. But for this one, we wanted to keep the podcast a secret until we released it. So I asked secretly for some questions on Twitter and got an overwhelming response, I'd say, Alex. A lot of questions in for you. This is from Dave George. He says, how many general public task suggestions have actually been seen on the screen? And I'm going to add the caveat, if any.
None yet. So we do get sent a lot, and actually in the book, which is still available, one of the tasks is to come up with a Taskmaster task, because I really like hearing people's suggestions. And kids send in some really good ones, including a child of a comedian who's going to feature in the show.
Wow. And
the child of the comedian who's going to feature in the show in the future has come up with one of the, perhaps one of the only ones that has made it. There's a studio task. Oh, I don't know which episode it's in. It's a drawing one, Ed.
Okay.
And it's a task where Daisy loses her temper more than ever before. It's a great moment.
Well, I know anyway, that feeling.
That came up. Yeah, it's a similar one to your one. That was invented by a child of a comedian. But I have been inspired by people's suggestions. Normally they say something and I go, oh, there's definitely something in that, and then go off in a different direction. I'm slightly loath to take people's suggestions because it feels like you're robbing them and they should be paid. If an idea is good enough, it will go in. But it will probably be tinkered with because... You know,
also, you do want to make it yours as well. I think you'd feel bad about taking someone's suggestion wholesale as well, because you'd be like, I should be coming up with them, really.
Yes, yeah, and we're not showing signs of running out yet.
No, that's good. This is from Paul Jones. Thinking back over the 10 series, is there a task that when he saw it being undertaken, he wished a specific contestant from another series could have attempted it?
Not really. I often would like to see lots of people also doing the tasks. There's people I miss, I suppose. I loved it whenever Bob Mortimer opened the envelope, because his eyes lit up and, you know, I'd always be excited to see what he was going to do. Same with Lisa Tarbuck. Often the champions were champions for a reason. They were really good at it. I do miss my mates, so Tim Key and Mark Watson, they are my only mates, really. And it is amazing having your friends do it, because then you spend a day with your mate and you're in charge of them.
Yeah.
So that's fun. But... So everyone's brought something to it, without sounding like I'm copying out too much, but we've had 50 people now, and I would have any of them back in a heartbeat. And it's sort of a shame that we've committed to not doing that. It's the right choice, I think, but you can't suddenly slip Nish Kumar back in the series. You know, then you'd have to have everyone back.
I think it'd be hilarious if you slipped Nish Kumar back in the series, to be honest. Just suddenly, okay. But not have him in the studio. Just have him occasionally doing a task and not mention it. That would be great. What's your most stomach-dropping moment when a contestant suddenly asks, actually, could you do this for me? That's from Gaz.
It's probably the most infamous one was Lisa Tarbuck having to show Greg how much she loved him. And immediately, it was one of those instinctive moments, said, right, get me the biggest cake you can. And we didn't know why until we got back. Oh, no, we did. She just explained very carefully, I want the biggest cake because I want you to take your trousers off and your pants and sit in the cake.
But that still doesn't explain why, though, does it? That's just telling you what to do. It doesn't explain why she decided to make you do that, really.
Yeah, I mean, she argued it was the feeling of the unbridled sort of joy of sitting naked on a cake was how she felt towards Greg. But there's about an hour between the cake arriving and her ordering it, so I'm thinking, well, this is going to happen. A lot of arranging the cameras carefully in the shed. Because, yeah, not only was I sitting on a cake naked, it was in a shed. It's quite cold.
Your plan was to show your love for me vicariously through my assistant. And?
Well, if that was love,
Turns out I've not been in love before.
Have you ever had a task withdrawn due to health and safety / logistics reasons? That's from Luke Thomas.
Every single series, a contestant asks to go on the roof of the house.
Right.
And either jump off or throw things off. And every series, we have to say we can't because of insurance. Every single series. I'm sure you asked to go up.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure, yeah. It's probably not even a task. I probably just arrived and said, can I eat my breakfast on the roof? Which tasted worse, Lou Sanders' flambéed porn or the Ed Gamble spit tea?
Your tea was fine. It was the thought of your tea. The taste was fine, but it was the fact that I knew where it had come from. Eating burnt paper is awful.
Porn or otherwise.
Yeah, it's like having a cigarette, but eating the cigarette as well, I think.
Oh, no. Yeah, definitely that.
Yeah. The hot toothpaste pie is still probably the worst thing I've eaten. It's so confusing.
Three more very quick ones. They're barely questions. Shanghai Hannah says, I'm 36. Can I wear driving gloves?
Yes, and you should.
Sue Perkins, actual Sue Perkins says, how do you like your eggs in the morning?
It's pronounced Superkins, and I like them. I like having three varieties of eggs in one sitting. Fried, scrambled, and eggy pop.
Eggy pop?
Yeah, so put an egg in a mug, stick it in the microwave for a minute. That's an eggy pop. You put a stick in it and it comes out like a lollipop.
Beautiful. And one final question from Nish Kumar. How do you like them apples?
I've heard that phrase so often since he was on it. It's now the phrase that everyone uses. Not because of him, but you just sort of notice it more. I like my apples like his hair at the beginning of Hello America, his programme.
The perfect answer. Alex Horn, thank you very much for being our guest on the first ever episode of the official Taskmaster podcast. Have you enjoyed yourself?
I have enjoyed myself.
Give the podcast experience points between 1 and 5.
5 full points, Ed.
Thank you. Well, there we have it. That was it. The first episode of the official Taskmaster podcast. And what a time we had. Thank you very much, Alex Horn, for coming on. Alex might be popping up throughout the series as well on the podcast. Of course, he's popping up throughout the actual Taskmaster series, Thursdays at 9 on Channel 4, and also the family-friendly version on E4, 6 o'clock on Sundays, apart from Episode 1, which is 5:45. He'll be on that loads, but he may well pop up on the official Taskmaster poddy again. We didn't talk about the studio task. I just realised we ran out of time. We got so deep into the other tasks that we didn't even get to the studio task. It was a classic Taskmaster studio task. It involved balls. It involved panicking. Richard won, of course, because everyone else was sort of helping each other, really mucking in. And Richard did what you need to be a winner and just sort of got his head down and got the hell on with it. So Richard won the episode overall, but a very tight episode, I'm sure we'll all agree, mainly because nobody did very well at anything, which was perfect. I agree with Alex. I much prefer that. So Richard won the overall episode, but everything's pretty tight. Everything's tight at the top and at the bottom. It's only the first episode. And we'll be updating everyone on the series points as the series goes on, of course. But we want your questions. That's what we want. We want you guys to get involved in the podcast. If you email taskmasterpodcast@gmail.com with any questions for me, any general Taskmaster questions, any specific questions for our guest, that's taskmasterpodcast@gmail.com. And now I can announce next week's guest is Nish Kumar, the wonderful Nish Kumar, my best friend and the worst ever competitor on Taskmaster. I've not seen the stats on that, but he's got to be down there. Very memorable competitor, sure, but so many mistakes that we're going to talk to him about. I'm sure you've got a lot of questions for Nish. Don't think he ever won an episode, which is fairly impressive, I tell you. So do email taskmasterpodcast@gmail.com with all of your questions for Nish. Also, hit up the YouTube channel. There's so much stuff on the Taskmaster YouTube channel, youtube.com /Taskmaster. Very, very simple. youtube.com/Taskmaster. And listen, you guys are Taskmaster fans. You've got to check out the Taskmaster store. Taskmasterstore.com. You can buy all sorts of Taskmaster-related goodies on there. Go and check it out. And I would say as well, look, you've watched the show, you've listened to the podcast. If you feel like you've not exhausted your love of Taskmaster, And let's be honest, how can you even do that? It's a bottomless well of excitement. There are other Taskmaster podcasts out there. There's one called Melon Buffet. There's a couple of other ones. Just do a bit of digging. You'll find more Taskmaster fan-made podcasts. So go and look at those as well. It's been wonderful. It's been wonderful hanging out. I can't wait to embark on this journey with you. Remember, this show is going to be out straight after the main show, Thursdays, 9 p.m. Channel 4. That's when the main show's on. And we're out after that discussing and dissecting. But for now, thank you very much. Goodbye!